That's what they used to say in the old comedies. Kindly be seated. And with a rapid gesture he seized an empty chair. It was a rough wooden chair, not upholstered, and set it for him almost in the middle of the room. Then, taking another similar chair for himself, he sat down facing Alishaw, so close to him that their knees almost touched. Nikolay Ilyich Snegiryov, sir, formerly a captain in the Russian infantry, put to shame for his vices, but still a captain. Though I might not be one now for the way I talk, for the last half of my life I've learned to say sir. It's a word you use when you've come down in the world. That's very true, smiled Alishaw. But is it used involuntarily or on purpose? As gods above, it's involuntary, and I usen't to use it. I didn't use the word sir all my life, but as soon as I sank into low water I began to say sir. It's the work of a higher power. I see you are interested in contemporary questions, but how can I have excited your curiosity, living as I do in surroundings impossible for the exercise of hospitality? I've come, about that business.
About what business?
The captain interrupted impatiently. About your meeting with my brother Dmitri Fyodorovich, Alishaw blurted out awkwardly.
What meeting, sir?
You don't mean that meeting?
About my wisp of tow, then?
He moved closer so that his knees positively knocked against Alishaw. His lips were strangely compressed like a thread.
What wisp of tow?
Muttered Alishaw.
He is come to complain of me, father.
Cried a voice familiar to Alishaw, the voice of the schoolboy, from behind the curtain. I bit his finger just now. The curtain was pulled, and Alishaw saw his assailant lying on a little bed made up on the bench in the chair in the corner under the icons. The boy lay covered by his coat and an old wadded quilt. He was evidently unwell, and, judging by his glittering eyes, he was in a fever. He looked at Alishaw without fear, as though he felt he was at home and could not be touched.
What? Did he bite your finger?
The captain jumped up from his chair.
Was it your finger he bit?
Yes. He was throwing stones with other schoolboys. There were six of them against him alone. I went up to him, and he threw a stone at me and then another at my head. I asked him what I had done to him. And then he rushed at me and bit my finger badly. I don't know why.
I'll thrash him, sir, at once, this minute.
The captain jumped up from his seat. But I am not complaining at all, I am simply telling you. I don't want him to be thrashed. Besides, he seems to be ill.
And do you suppose I'd thrash him?
That I'd take my Alishaw and thrash him before you for your satisfaction?
Would you like it done at once, sir?
Said the captain, suddenly turning to Alishaw, as though he were going to attack him.
I am sorry about your finger, sir. But instead of thrashing Alishaw, would you like me to chop off my four fingers with this knife here before your eyes to satisfy your just wrath?
I should think four fingers would be enough to satisfy your thirst for vengeance.
You won't ask for the fifth one too?
He stopped short with a catch in his throat. Every feature in his face was twitching and working, he looked extremely defiant. He was in a sort of frenzy.
I think I understand it all now. Said Alishaw gently and sorrowfully, still keeping his seat.
So your boy is a good boy, he loves his father, and he attacked me as the brother of your assailant.
Now I understand it, he repeated thoughtfully.
But my brother Dmitri Fyodorovich regrets his action, I know that, and if only it is possible for him to come to you, or better still, to meet you in that same place, he will ask your forgiveness before everyone, if you wish it.
After pulling out my beard, you mean, he will ask my forgiveness?
And he thinks that will be a satisfactory finish, doesn't he?
Oh, no.
On the contrary, he will do anything you like and in any way you like.
So if I were to ask His Highness to go down on his knees before me in that very tavern, the metropolis it's called, or in the marketplace, he would do it?
Yes, he would even go down on his knees.
You've pierced me to the heart, sir.
Touched me to tears and pierced me to the heart.
I am only too sensible of your brother's generosity. Allow me to introduce my family, my two daughters and my son, my litter. If I die, who will care for them? And while I live, who but they will care for a wretch like me? That's a great thing the Lord has ordained for every man of my sort, sir. For there must be someone able to love even a man like me.
Ah, that's perfectly true, exclaimed Alishaw.
Oh, do leave off playing the fool. Some idiot comes in, and you put us to shame, cried the girl by the window, suddenly turning to her father with a disdainful and contemptuous air.
Wait a little, Varvara, cried her father, speaking peremptorily but looking at them quite approvingly.
That's her character, he said, addressing Alishaw again. And in all nature there was naught that could find favor in his eyes, or rather in the feminine, that could find favor in her eyes. But now let me present you to my wife, Arina Petrovna. She is crippled, she is 43, she can move, but very little. She is of humble origin. Arina Petrovna, compose your countenance. This is Alexey Fyodorovich Karamazov. Get up, Alexey Fyodorovich. He took him by the hand and with unexpected force pulled him up. You must stand up to be introduced to a lady. It's not the Karamazov, Mama, who, H.M., etc., but his brother, radiant with modest virtues. Come, Arina Petrovna, come, Mama, first your hand to be kissed. And he kissed his wife's hand respectfully and even tenderly. The girl at the window turned her back indignantly on the scene. An expression of extraordinary cordiality came over the haughtily inquiring face of the woman. Good morning. Sit down, Mr. Karamazov, she said. Karamazov, Mama, Karamazov. We are of humble origin, he whispered again. Well, Karamazov, or whatever it is, but I always think of Karamazov. Sit down. Why has he pulled you up? He calls me crippled, but I am not, only my legs are swollen like barrels, and I am shriveled up myself. Once I used to be so fat, but now it's as though I had swallowed a needle. We are of humble origin, the captain muttered again. Oh, father, father. The hunchback girl, who had till then been silent on her chair, said suddenly, and she hid her eyes in her handkerchief. Buffoon, blurted out the girl at the window. Have you heard our news? Said the mother, pointing at her daughters. It's like clouds coming over, the clouds pass and we have music again. When we were with the army, we used to have many such guests. I don't mean to make any comparisons, everyone to their taste. The deacon's wife used to come then and say, Alexander Alexandrovich is a man of the noblest heart, but Nastasia Petrovna, she would say, is of the brood of hell. Well, I said, that's a matter of taste, but you are a little spitfire. And you want keeping in your place, says she. You black sword, said I, who asked you to teach me. But my breath, says she, is clean, and yours is unclean. You ask all the officers whether my breath is unclean. And ever since then I had it in my mind. Not long ago I was sitting here as I am now, when I saw that very general come in who came here for Easter, and I asked him, Your Excellency, said I, can a lady's breath be unpleasant? Yes, he answered, you ought to open a window, pane or open the door, for the air is not fresh here. And they all go on like that. And what is my breath to them? The dead smell worse still. I won't spoil the air, said I. I'll order some slippers and go away. My darlings, don't blame your own mother. Nikolay Ilyich, how is it I can't please you? There's only Ilyushaw who comes home from school and loves me. Yesterday he brought me an apple. Forgive your own mother, forgive a poor lonely creature. Why has my breath become unpleasant to you? And the poor mad woman broke into sobs, and tears streamed down her cheeks. The captain rushed up to her. Mama, mama, my dear, give over. You are not lonely. Everyone loves you, everyone adores you. He began kissing both her hands again and tenderly stroking her face. Taking the dinner napkin, he began wiping away her tears. Alishaw fancied that he too had tears in his eyes. There, you see, you hear? He turned with a sort of fury to Alishaw, pointing to the poor imbecile. I see and hear, muttered Alishaw. Father, father, how can you, with him? Let him alone, cried the boy, sitting up in his bed and gazing at his father with glowing eyes. Do give over fooling, showing off your silly antics which never lead to anything, shouted Varvara, stamping her foot with passion. Your anger is quite just this time, Varvara, and I'll make haste to satisfy you. Come, put on your cap, Alexey Fyodorovich, and I'll put on mine. We will go out. I have a word to say to you in earnest, but not within these walls. This girl sitting here is my daughter Nina, I forgot to introduce her to you. She is a heavenly angel incarnate, who has flown down to us mortals. If you can understand. There he is shaking all over, as though he is in convulsions. Varvara went on indignantly. And she there stamping her foot at me and calling me a fool just now, she is a heavenly angel incarnate too, and she has good reason to call me so. Come along, Alexey Fyodorovich, we must make an end. And, snatching Alishaw's hand, he drew him out of the room into the street. Chapter 7, and in the open air the air is fresh, but in my apartment it is not so in any sense of the word. Let us walk slowly, sir. I should be glad of your kind interest. I too have something important to say to you, observed Alishaw, only I don't know how to begin. To be sure you must have business with me. You would never have looked in upon me without some object. Unless you come simply to complain of the boy, and that's hardly likely. And, by the way, about the boy, I could not explain to you in there, but here I will describe that scene to you. My toe was thicker a week ago, I mean my beard. That's the nickname they give to my beard. The schoolboys most of all. Well, your brother Dmitri Fyodorovich was pulling me by my beard, I'd done nothing, he was in a towering rage and happened to come upon me. He dragged me out of the tavern into the marketplace. At that moment the boys were coming out of school, and with them Milushaw. As soon as he saw me in such a state he rushed up to me. Father, he cried, father. He caught hold of me, hugged me, tried to pull me away, crying to my assailant, let go, let go. It's my father, forgive him, yes, he actually cried forgive him. He clutched at that hand, that very hand, in his little hands and kissed it. I remember his little face at that moment, I haven't forgotten it and I never shall. I swear, cried Alishaw, that my brother will express his most deep and sincere regret, even if he has to go down on his knees in that same market place. I'll make him or he is no brother of mine. Aha! Then it's only a suggestion. And it does not come from him but simply from the generosity of your own warm heart. You should have said so. No, in that case allow me to tell you of your brother's highly chivalrous soldierly generosity, for he did give expression to it at the time. He left off dragging me by my beard and released me. You are an officer, he said, and I am an officer. If you can find a decent man to be your second, send me your challenge. I will give satisfaction, though you are a scoundrel. That's what he said. A chivalrous spirit indeed. I retired with Ilushaw, and that scene is a family record imprinted forever on Ilushaw's soul. No, it's not for us to claim the privileges of noblemen. Judge for yourself. You've just been in our mansion, what did you see there? Three ladies, one a cripple and weak-minded. Another a cripple and hunchback and the third not crippled but far too clever. She is a student, dying to get back to Petersburg, to work for the emancipation of the Russian woman on the banks of the Neva. I won't speak of Ilushaw, he is only 9. I am alone in the world, and if I die, what will become of all of them? I simply ask you that. And if I challenge him and he kills me on the spot, what then? What will become of them? And worse still, if he doesn't kill me but only cripples me, I couldn't work, but I should still be a mouth to feed. Who would feed it and who would feed them all? Must I take Ilushaw from school and send him to beg in the streets? That's what it means for me to challenge him to a duel. It's silly talk and nothing else. He will beg your forgiveness, He will bow down at your feet in the middle of the marketplace, cried Alishaw again, with glowing eyes. I did think of prosecuting him, the captain went on. But look in our code, could I get much compensation for a personal injury? And then Agrafena Alexandrovna sent for me and shouted at me, don't dare to dream of it. If you proceed against him, I'll publish it to all the world that he beat you for your dishonesty, and then you will be prosecuted. I call God to witness whose was the dishonesty and by whose commands I acted. Wasn't it by her own and Fyodor Pavlovich's? And what's more, she went on, I'll dismiss you for good and you'll never earn another penny from me. I'll speak to my merchant too, that's what she calls her old man, and he will dismiss you. And if he dismisses me, what can I earn then from anyone? Those two are all I have to look to, for your Fyodor Pavlovich has not only given over employing me, for another reason, but he means to make use of papers I've signed to go to law against me. And so I kept quiet, and you have seen our retreat. But now let me ask you, did Yelushaw hurt your finger much? I didn't like to go into it in our mansion before him. Grushenka. Yes, very much, and he was in a great fury. He was avenging you on me as a Karamazov, I see that now. But if only you had seen how he was throwing stones at his schoolfellows. It's very dangerous. They might kill him. They are children and stupid. A stone may be thrown and break somebody's head. That's just what has happened. He has been bruised by a stone today. Not on the head but on the chest, just above the heart. He came home crying and groaning and now he is ill. And you know he attacks them first. He is bitter against them on your account. They say he stabbed a boy called Krasotkin with a penknife not long ago. I've heard about that too, it's dangerous. Krasotkin is an official here, we may hear more about it. I would advise you, Alishaw went on warmly, not to send him to school at all for a time till he is calmer. And his anger is past. Anger. The captain repeated, that's just what it is. He is a little creature, but it's a mighty anger. You don't know all, sir. Let me tell you more. Since that incident all the boys have been teasing him about the wisp of tow. Schoolboys are a merciless race. Individually they are angels, but together, especially in schools, they are often merciless. Their teasing has stiffed up a gallant spirit in Ilushaw. An ordinary boy, a weak son, would have submitted, have felt ashamed of his father, sir, but he stood up for his father against them all. For his father and for truth and justice. For what he suffered when he kissed your brother's hand and cried to him, forgive father, forgive him, that only God knows, and I, his father. For our children, not your children, but ours, the children of the poor gentleman looked down upon by everyone, know what justice means, sir, even at 9 years old. How should the rich know? They don't explore such depths once in their lives. But at that moment in the square when he kissed his hand, at that moment my Ilushaw had grasped all that justice means. That truth entered into him and crushed him forever, sir, the captain said hotly again with a sort of frenzy, and he struck his right fist against his left palm as though he wanted to show how the truth crushed Ilushaw. That very day, sir, he fell ill with fever and was delirious all night. All that day he hardly said a word to me, but I noticed he kept watching me from the corner, though he turned to the window and pretended to be learning his lessons. But I could see his mind was not on his lessons. Next day I got drunk to forget my troubles, sinful man as I am, and I don't remember much. Mama began crying, too, I am very fond of Mama, well, I spent my last penny drowning my troubles. Don't despise me for that, sir, in Russia men who drink are the best. The best men amongst us are the greatest drunkards. I lay down and I don't remember about Ilushaw, though all that day the boys had been jeering at him at school. Wisp of tow, they shouted, your father was pulled out of the tavern by his wisp of tow, you ran by and begged forgiveness. On the third day when he came back from school, I saw he looked pale and wretched. What is it? I asked. He wouldn't answer. Well, there's no talking in our mansion without Mama and the girls taking part in it. What's more, the girls had heard about it the very first day. Varvara had begun snarling. You fools and buffoons, can you ever do anything rational? Quite so, I said, can we ever do anything rational? For the time I turned it off like that. So in the evening I took the boy out for a walk, for you must know we go for a walk every evening, always the same way, along which we are going now, from our gate to that great stone which lies alone in the road under the hurdle, which marks the beginning of the town pasture. A beautiful and lonely spot, sir. Ilusha and I walked along hand in hand as usual. He has a little hand, his fingers are thin and cold, he suffers with his chest, you know. Father, said he, father. Well? Said I. I saw his eyes flashing. Father, how he treated you then. It can't be helped, Ilusha, I said. Don't forgive him, father. Don't forgive him. At school they say that he has paid you 10 rubles for it. No, Ilusha, said I would not take money from him for anything. He began trembling all over, took my hand in both his and kissed it again. Father, he said, father, challenge him to a duel. At school they say you are a coward and won't challenge him, and that you'll accept 10 rubles from him. I can't challenge him to a duel, Ilusha, I answered. And I told briefly what I've just told you. He listened. Father, he said, anyway don't forgive it. When I grow up I'll call him out myself and kill him. His eyes shone and glowed. And of course I am his father, and I had to put in a word. It's a sin to kill, I said, even in a duel. Father, he said, when I grow up, I'll knock him down, knock the sword out of his hand, I'll fall on him, wave my sword over him and say, I could kill you. But I forgive you, so there. You see what the workings of his little mind have been during these 2 days. He must have been planning that vengeance all day, and raving about it at night. But he began to come home from school badly beaten. I found out about it the day before yesterday, and you are right, I won't send him to that school anymore. I heard that he was standing up against all the class alone and defying them all, that his heart was full of resentment, of bitterness. I was alarmed about him. We went for another walk. Father, he asked, are the rich people stronger than anyone else on earth? Yes, Ilusha, I said, there are no people on earth stronger than the rich. Father, he said, I will get rich, I will become an officer and conquer everybody. The Tsar will reward me, I will come back here and then no one will dare. Then he was silent and his lips still kept trembling. Father, he said, what a horrid town this is. Yes, Ilusha, I said, it isn't a very nice town. Father, let us move into another town, a nice one, he said, where people don't know about us. We will move, we will, Ilusha, said I, only I must save up for it. I was glad to be able to turn his mind from painful thoughts, and we began to dream of how we would move to another town, how we would buy a horse and cart. We will put Mama and your sisters inside, we will cover them up and we'll walk, you shall have a lift now and then, and I'll walk beside, for we must take care of our horse, we can't all ride. That's how we'll go. He was enchanted at that, most of all at the thought of having a horse and driving him. For of course a Russian boy is born among horses. We chatted a long while. Thank God, I thought, I have diverted his mind and comforted him. That was the day before yesterday, in the evening, but last night everything was changed. He had gone to school in the morning. He came back depressed, terribly depressed. In the evening I took him by the hand and we went for a walk. He would not talk. There was a wind blowing and no sun, and a feeling of autumn, twilight was coming on. We walked along, both of us depressed. Well, my boy, said I, how about our setting off on our travels? I thought I might bring him back to our talk of the day before. He didn't answer, but I felt his fingers trembling in my hand. Ah, I thought, it's a bad job, There's something fresh. We had reached the stone where we are now. I sat down on the stone. And in the air there were lots of kites flapping and whirling. There were as many as 30 in sight. Of course, it's just the season for the kites. Look, Ilushor, said I, it's time we got out our last year's kite again. I'll mend it. Where have you put it away? My boy made no answer. He looked away and turned sideways to me. And then a gust of wind blew up the sand. He suddenly fell on me, threw both his little arms round my neck and held me tight. You know, when children are silent and proud, and try to keep back their tears when they are in great trouble and suddenly break down, their tears fall in streams. With those warm streams of tears, he suddenly wetted my face. He sobbed and shook as though he were in convulsions, and squeezed up against me as I sat on the stone. Father, he kept crying, dear father, how he insulted you. And I sobbed too. We sat shaking in each other's arms. Ilushor, I said to him, Ilushor, darling. No one saw us then. God alone saw us. I hope he will record it to my credit. You must thank your brother, Alexei Fyodorovich. No, sir, I won't thrash my boy for your satisfaction. He had gone back to his original tone of resentful buffoonery. Alushor felt, though, that he trusted him, and that if there had been someone else in his, Alushor's place, the man would not have spoken so openly and would not have told what he had just told. This encouraged Alushor, whose heart was trembling on the verge of tears. Ah, how I would like to make friends with your boy! He cried. If you could arrange it, certainly, sir, muttered the captain. But now listen to something quite different. Alushor went on. I have a message for you. That same brother of mine, Dmitri, has insulted his betrothed, too, a noble-hearted girl of whom you have probably heard. I have a right to tell you of her wrong, I ought to do so, in fact, for, hearing of the insult done to you and learning all about your unfortunate position, she commissioned me at once, just now, to bring you this help from her, but only from her alone, not from Dmitri, who has abandoned her. Nor from me, his brother, nor from anyone else, but from her, only from her. She entreats you to accept her help. You have both been insulted by the same man. She thought of you only when she had just received a similar insult from him, similar in its cruelty, I mean. She comes like a sister to help a brother in misfortune. She told me to persuade you to take these 200 rubles from her, as a from a sister, knowing that you are in such need. No one will know of it, it can give rise to no unjust slander. There are the 200 rubles, and I swear you must take them unless all men are to be enemies on earth. But there are brothers even on earth. You have a generous heart. You must see that, you must, and Alushor held out two new rainbow-colored 100-ruble notes. They were both standing at the time by the great stone close to the fence, and there was no one near. The notes seemed to produce a tremendous impression on the captain. He started, but at first only from astonishment. Such an outcome of their conversation was the last thing he expected. Nothing could have been farther from his dreams than help from anyone, and such a sum. He took the notes, and for a minute he was almost unable to answer. Quite a new expression came into his face. That for me? So much money, 200 rubles. Good heavens. Why, I haven't seen so much money for the last 4 years. Mercy on us. And she says she is his sister. And is that the truth? I swear that all I told you is the truth, cried Alushor. The captain flushed red. Listen, my dear, listen. If I take it, I shan't be behaving like a scoundrel? In your eyes, Alexei Fyodorovich, I shan't be a scoundrel? No, Alexei Fyodorovich, listen, listen, he hurried, touching Alushor with both his hands. You are persuading me to take it, saying that it's a sister sends it, but inwardly, in your heart won't you feel contempt for me if I take it, eh? No, no, on my salvation I swear I shan't. And no one will ever know but me, I, you and she, and one other lady, her great friend. Never mind the lady. Listen, Alexei Fyodorovich, at a moment like this you must listen, for you can't understand what these 200 rubles mean to me now. The poor fellow went on rising gradually into a sort of incoherent, almost wild enthusiasm. He was thrown off his balance and talked extremely fast, as though afraid he would not be allowed to say all he had to say.